We are going to be reviewing this evening. Chris is away along with some of our other folks in Birmingham or down that way. And so we're going to be looking through the first 41 chapters of Genesis. If you've not been with us, that's where we've been going through the book of Genesis. The plan, I've been gone for more classes than I've been here since the quarter started. So I don't know what all Chris has done as far as telling you where we're headed here. We're going to go through the end of the Exodus, all right? So we're going all the way through the Exodus. That's why we're covering, obviously, at such a rapid pace going through the book of Genesis. Part of Exodus, we're going to skip over portions of the law. We'll come back and address that later. But our goal is to get all that in this quarter. But we don't want to go so fast that we're not letting anything sink in. And so we've got some reviews built in to the material. And so tonight we're going to be looking at those. All right, good. I can see what you're seeing now. All right. So we're going to be looking at these first 41 chapters. And what I'd like to start out doing is just go through the chapter content and get some feedback from you how you might summarize each chapter. Some of them are going to be real easy. And some of them we might talk about a little bit because there's multiple different things you could put into place. All right. So, first one's pretty easy. Matt, what's Genesis chapter 1? Yeah, creation. All right. Hopefully you can get that one. There are several chapters where you definitely want to be able to say, I know what that chapter's about. It'd be good if you can get them all memorized, but there are certain, I think, anchor points. And, of course, creation. We start out with that one as an anchor point. All right. Somebody tell me what chapter 2 is about. All right. Adam and Eve in the garden. There's a little bit of an overlap here, right? Because it tells us all of creation in chapter 1, goes all the way to the end of that story, really. And then it kind of comes back and I think circles back around and says, here's how the creation of man played out specifically. And so we see Adam and Eve being created in the garden and there are things said there about their relationship and so forth. We'll come back to that a little bit more in just a moment. All right, chapter 3. Yeah, sin and consequences of sin. Mine are going to be very brief because I wanted to keep them all in three columns. And so mine are going to be as brief as possible. You can make yours a little bit longer if you want to. But yeah, the first sin and the consequences that come from that. We're going to come back to this a little bit later as we review, but in those consequences, in the giving of those consequences, what else is there in Genesis chapter 3? Yeah, there's a promise. There's a prophecy that the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent would conflict. And we'll look at that more in Genesis 3:15 as we come back around. All right, chapter 4. Cain and Abel. Very good, Sheila. And so Cain and Abel is what takes up the most of the story of 4. Towards the end, we get the sort of genealogy of Cain there. And then that brings us to chapter 5. And what do we find there? Yeah, generations from Adam to Noah. All right, so it gets us from one to the other. And that's important. Why is that important? Why are genealogies, why do they mean anything, especially in this context? Yeah, right. Okay, that's one thing. Okay. But as far as, look, there's a lot of history not included. There's a whole lot of stories not being told. Why include these names in the first place? Pardon? Yeah, we're getting all the way from Adam to Christ. But I think one of the things that we do understand is that this is history being told. Chapter 5 flies in the face of somebody saying, this is all just mythology. It doesn't allow for it.
Or poetry.
It's just a way, it's an analogy, it's allegory. Chapter 5 doesn't fit. You can't shove that into allegory. It's this man begot this man begot this man begot this man. And so it's history. It's a historical document. And so I think that we need to pay attention to that. Yes, we're skipping over a bunch of names, but the names are there and they communicate something to us. So we need to appreciate that. All right. So from Adam to Noah, therefore, chapter 6, what is that about? All right. The flood. Particularly, what part of that story? Yeah. Noah builds the ark. All right. That's where the instructions are given and the ark is built. So then in chapter 7, once the ark is built, then what happens? Now the flood comes, the 40 days and 40 nights. And then chapter 8, after the rain stops, then what starts happening? The waters recede. And that takes a little while, and we see that whole chapter as that plays out, and Moses is testing the waters, as it were, to see, or excuse me, Noah. I do that a lot. Anyway, Noah is testing the waters to see when he can come out of the ark. All right, then chapter 9. I think it's probably the first chapter that gets difficult to summarize, but yeah. The rainbow covenant's the one I generally focus on because it's the most well known. But there are several instructions being given. There's blood for blood, and so forth. And so he gives instructions. What else happens in chapter 9? Noah's sin and the consequence of that. Who else? Ham sins. All right. And so the curse against Ham. And so there are a lot of things going on in chapter 9. I just try to pick the most prominent thing and use that. And that's my anchor point. And everything else is kind of attached to that. So chapter 9, the covenant of the rainbow. All right, chapter 10. More genealogies of whom? Now that's going to be in chapter 11. Yeah, chapter 10, whose genealogies are we looking at? It's the sons of Noah. And so particularly what's happening there is he's saying, here's where all the peoples of the world came from, and he traces those people back to the sons of Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. And then so here's all the populations of the world. And he does it by that. He's talking about peoples. He's not just talking about individuals, but talking about peoples that are around the world. All right, I think that's important to note because I think there's a connection between that in chapter 11. So we come to chapter 11, and what's that about? The Tower of Babel. That's actually just takes up a small portion, but it's the only narrative portion. The rest is going to be genealogy. And so the Tower of Babel, or scattering of the people, begins there at the beginning of chapter 11. Then the rest of the chapter, Greg, yeah, from Shem to Abraham, it gives us that genealogy that gets us from point A to point B. And there again, we've got, it's very similar to Genesis chapter 5. Genesis chapter 11 is making that transition from one story to the next in a historical context. All right. Still, you know, generations coming down the line. Okay. Picking up then in chapter 12, what's that about? All right. Promises to Abraham. And that is definitely the key feature in chapter 12. The promises of the what? Land, nation, and seed. All right. And of course the seed being the promise that is going to, have, consequences far down the line. Okay. There's something else that happens in chapter 12, towards the end of the chapter. There's a famine in the land. And so what does Abraham do? Goes to Egypt and does what? Lies about Sarah. All right. For the first time. All right, it's going to be two of those, but this is the first time that he does that with Pharaoh. All right, chapter 13, Abraham is prospering, and so what happens? Yeah, he and his and Lot separate, and he allows Lot to make his choice first. Lot chooses the land that looks better, but it's down towards Sodom and Gomorrah, and of course that's going to come up later in the story. All right, then into chapter 14. So what happens in chapter 14? Lot's taken captive. All right, there's a lot of things going on in chapter 14. Lot's taken captive. Then as a result, what happens? What does Abraham do? All right, I got a lot of... What now? What does Abraham do? He goes, takes his men, gathers his own personal army, and goes and rescues Lot and all the other people, really, that were taken captive, and brings them back. And then who do they meet up with on their way back? Melchizedek. All right. I put in Melchizedek because I think it's important. You know, I think he's a key figure. And if I can remember he meets up with Melchizedek, I generally remember how he got to Melchizedek, right? And so you may think differently than me on that, and you may put something else. That's fine. But that's kind of how I do. I pick out the thing that I can connect everything else to. All right. So he meets Melchizedek. And of course, we get some commentary on that from the Hebrew writer that helps us see some significance to that meeting between Abraham and Melchizedek. All right, chapter 15. Yeah. And what is that covenant about? Okay. Yes. And I call it the covenant of the promises. Generally, if I've got enough room to write all that out, I didn't. But if I've got enough room, I say I get the covenant of the promises. Now, a lot of people get that confused because you do have all three promises restated. But they're restated and then solidified with a covenant. And it, I think the representation there is like a covenant meal between Abraham and God. And so they solidify it in that way. All right, chapter 16. Yeah, Ishmael is born, all right? And this is the whole plot followed through and everything. Ishmael, you know, Sarah's idea, take my handmaid, and then the frustration that comes from that, all of that gets wrapped up into chapter 16. And so that's that chapter. All right, chapter 17, almost. Circumcision comes before the promise of Isaac, all right? So chapter 17 is circumcision. It's important to understand some order here, because what does Paul do with the order of the chapters here in Genesis? When he's talking about this in Romans chapter 4, he makes some points about circumcision and something God said about Abraham. That's right. And the Jews thought what about circumcision? Yeah, you can't be righteous without circumcision. Paul says it's not true, because God said this about Abraham when? In chapter 15. And then circumcision doesn't come until chapter 17. So it's good to understand that order that things happen in, because arguments are made based on the order things happen in. All right, chapter 18. Tony? Yeah, the birth of Isaac is promised by whom? Who comes and makes that promise? Heavenly visitors, right? I call this Abraham's visitors, right? Because they tell him more than one thing. They tell him the promise of Isaac, the reiteration that he will have an heir of his own flesh. What else do they tell him? Yeah, Sodom and Gomorrah is going to be destroyed. And that's where that conversation happens between Abraham and God about if there are 50, you know, and on so on, righteous people in Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, chapter 19. Sodom and Gomorrah, right? If you can remember what the visitors were talking about, that leads you right in to the next chapter with Sodom and Gomorrah. Of course, one of the elements of Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, we get the destruction there, but what's another element that's going to come into play later? What happens as a result? Pardon? Yeah, Moab and Ammon are conceived with Lot and his two daughters who are hiding in a cave, and so they're are in the mountain. And so that's going to come up later. Those nations, those are going to be nations later on. Okay, chapter 20. Yeah. All right, so this is the second occasion with Abraham and his wife Sarah, and coming up with the same story to tell Abimelech that they had told Pharaoh. Works out pretty similarly as far as that goes. But at any rate, he has this interaction with Abimelech. Abimelech doesn't want any part of that and sends Abraham on his way. All right, that brings us to chapter 21. What happens in 21? Yeah, birth of Isaac is in chapter 21. At this point, Ishmael has shown back up, and so what happens to Ishmael now? Yeah, he's mocking or laughing and so forth, and so Sarah wants him out of here, and God reassures Abraham, he'll be taken care of, and he will become the father of many nations. All right, chapter 22. Yeah, he just arrives. All right, we come all this way, and he's just arrived, and now the sacrifice of Isaac is made in chapter 22, and so that's a pretty pivotal chapter to keep in mind as well. All right, chapter 23. What happens after that? All right, the death of Sarah. All right. And so as a result of that, one of the reasons we have a lengthy chapter about that is we have the Abraham going and purchasing land, remember, in order to bury her. And so that story is told to us as well there. All right, chapter 24 then, what's the next thing that Abraham does? Yeah, he goes to find a bride for Isaac, which is whom? All right, it is Rebekah. All right, and so that's chapter 24, the whole story of the servant going up there. And, you know, making the promise to Abraham, and then, you know, sort of laying out beforehand what he was looking for. And Rebekah met all those, all that sort of prediction. And so she willingly comes And at the end of the chapter, we see Rebekah and Isaac coming together. All right, chapter 25, lots going on. What all goes on? Just give me one important aspect of it. Abraham dies. All right, that's pretty important. What else? Huh? Jacob and Esau are what? Born. What else? Esau sells his birthright. We go all the way through a good portion of the lives of Jacob and Esau. And I put Jacob and Esau here. I think that's a good summary of the chapter, is that it's about them. And it just, it really focuses on them. And all the way up to the point that Esau does sell his birthright. All right. Chapter 26, our attention turns back particularly to Isaac. And what's he doing? Abimelech. And what's he doing with Abimelech? The same thing as his father did with Abimelech. Yeah, that's pretty good. That sounds like something Brother Hutto would say. If you've got drawn a blank, maybe it's Abimelech, yeah. So Isaac and Abimelech, and they have a similar circumstance. He lies about Rebekah. And again, it works out similarly as with Abraham and Abimelech. All right, chapter 27 then. Yeah. Jacob deceives Isaac and receives the blessing of the birthright. And how does Esau react to that? Badly. he is very angered. And to what degree? Yeah, he's gonna kill his brother. All right. So what does Jacob do in chapter 28? He runs. All right. Jacob flees. He also has a dream in this chapter. And what does he name the place where he has the dream? Bethel. All right. And we'll come back around to that in a few more chapters. But he names that place, and he takes that stone and sets it up. The stone that he slept on, and sets that up as a marker of that place. All right, from there he continues north up to meet who? Huh? Yeah, Rachel and Leah, Laban, but then his two daughters is who he's going to marry. What order does he marry them in? Huh? Yeah, so Leah first, then Rachel. What order did he want to marry him in? Rachel, then not Leah, right? It's not just a different order. He didn't even ask for the other one. And so he's deceived into that. He worked 7 years. Remember, he worked 7 years for what turns out to be Leah. And then he's given Rachel, but must also work another 7 years for her as well. All right. Then in chapter 30, what begins to happen? Yeah, they begin to have children. And how do those sons come? I mean, what's the, like, how's the storyline work out? Hmm? Why does she give him her handmaid? Why does she do that? Yeah, she's losing 4-0, right? I mean, it is total competition. It's not a healthy relationship. And so that's what happens. It's the back and forth. You got Leah having, and then Rachel gives her handmaid, then Leah gives her handmaid. And so it's back and forth all the way along. But most of the sons of Jacob are born and numbered there in chapter 30. All right, then chapter 31, what does Jacob get sick of? Yeah, he gets tired of Laban. He lists out the mistreatment. You've changed my wages. You've been unfair. And that comes later in the conversation. But in conversation with his wives, who maybe Jacob thought would want to stay, they're like, when are we getting out of here? You know, they see it. They don't think their father's been fair. And so they all take off, and they take off while Laban is away. He comes to kind of chastise them. Rachel had taken some of the household gods and so forth. And so he comes chasing after them, and they kind of set up a DMZ, the line of demarcation. You don't cross over here. I don't cross over there. And we're just gonna leave each other be. Of course, Laban the whole time's acting like he doesn't understand what the big deal is, what's the problem. He knows. But at any rate, all right. Chapter 32. Well, let me ask this: in chapter 31, or as we begin chapter 32, who is coming? Who is on his way that Jacob knows he's about to meet up with? Esau. Now that's not going to happen yet, but he already knows it. And so he spends the night in chapter 32 on the other side of the river. And what happens there? Yeah. And other texts will call it an angel. It's a man. It's an angel. It's God, depending on what particular verse you're looking at. But he wrestles with this angel. And what's the result of all of this that's particularly important as we're moving forward in the story? There's a name change. And what is the name change to? Israel, which means struggles with God, right? And so how very appropriate. You know, I don't think that's what it's supposed to mean from the standpoint of like they give God a hard time. But I think that maybe what it comes to mean, Israel just really embodies this name, unfortunately, as they go on in their history. All right. Chapter 33 then. We already mentioned it. What happens next? Yeah, he meets Esau, and how does that work out for Jacob? Yeah, it doesn't die. A lot better than he expected. Not only does he not die, Esau says, I don't even want your stuff. I got plenty of stuff. I got all I need. And he turns him, in fact, he didn't turn him away. He invites him to come live with him. And Jacob doesn't press his luck. he's sort of like, we'll be over there in a few days. We got a lot of folks here. You just go on. And so Esau goes on and Jacob stays behind. All right. Chapter 35, we got a little bit of an aside. And so we see some of the sins of Jacob's sons. What's this first encounter with wickedness of Jacob's sons? Yeah. So, this man named Shechem, loves Dinah and, forces himself upon her. And the brothers say to Jacob, are you going to do anything about this? Jacob's trying to keep peace for good or for ill. I don't make a judgment call on whether Jacob is doing. Jacob is a mess. Okay. He is a mess and his family's a mess. And so I'm not sitting here saying who's right and who's wrong. I know the sons are wrong. Jacob probably was not handling this the best way, but at any rate, they come to an agreement that they've got to be circumcised if they're going to marry Dinah, so they do. And then at that point, the sons of Jacob go in and wipe out Shechem, all the men of Shechem. And so they bring dishonor to themselves. All right, 35. It's another aside. Well, it's not, I'm sorry, we're picking back up on the story, 36 is an aside. What is it? Yeah. All right, so Isaac dies, Rebecca dies, Rachel dies. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah, Rachel dies. And when does she die? What's going on when she dies? Yeah, the birth of Benjamin is when she dies. So Jacob moves back to that place where he had that dream, Bethel. Does anybody know what Bethel means? Yeah, house of God. Beth is house, El is God. And so Bethel is house of God. So that's where Jacob moves back to. Now we got another aside in chapter 36. And who does that tell us about? Yeah. The generations of the sons of Esau who would become the nation of Edom. All right. Chapter 37, whose story do we pick up focusing on? All right. That's the story of Joseph. That's where it begins with the coat of many colors, the jealousy of the brothers being sold into slavery. And so forth. Then chapter 38, turn the attention away. We're hopping around a lot in the 30s. The 30s are the hardest to memorize because it's bouncing around. So from Joseph, we turn attention back to the sons of Jacob, one son in particular. And who is that? Judah. And what woman?
Tamar,
his daughter-in-law, who he ends up conceiving a child with unknowingly. And as Chris said, I thought it was pretty good. He said, you know, Tamar is definitely involved in, questionable activity, but she ends up looking pretty good by comparison to everybody else in the story. And I think you get that a lot, in some of these stories. All right. And so Judah's kind of a mess too. All right. 39, we go back to who?
Joseph.
All right, Joseph. And we're going to stay focused on Joseph for the rest of the book. All right, so you can kind of, if you say, all right, it's something to do with Joseph. And I think that we can separate those stories out pretty well till we can kind of jump from one story to the next if we can keep it straight in our minds. So 39, what's the first story? Yeah, Potiphar and Potiphar's wife particularly lying about Joseph and so forth and getting him thrown into jail. And so in jail, chapter 40, what happens? Yeah, the butler's dream and the baker's dream. And he interprets those dreams. And of course, the baker, which one, the butler or the baker, who gets to go back? The butler goes back and the baker is the one who's, who gets hung, as Chris said, for the birthday party. You know, you got a celebration and we're going to have a hanging. The butler does not remember, Joseph until what? Until Pharaoh has a dream. All right. And that leads us at chapter 41. That's how far we've gotten. And so we're going to stop there and we're going to back up and we're going to note some things about the chapters we've covered. All right. So the first thing I want to note about the chapters we've covered is if we're grouping them, there's several different ways we can go about grouping them. But one is by time periods. And so if we're, I mean, even taking, stepping away from Brother Waldron's material, just looking at them on their own right, how would we group the first group of stories? Where would be a break in time? Yeah. Yeah. So it's these first five chapters. All right. And it's the definite break in time because chapter five is, you know, you're hitting the fast forward button. All right. It's a massive gap of time between the stories of Adam and Eve and their sons, and then the genealogies that carry you way into the future, to the time of Noah. All right. All right. So then, where's the next break in time? Yeah. So you could go all the way down to 11, but if we're looking at the story in 11 and we see the generations of when that happened, there is a good bit of separation. It kind of falls in between. And so it's not really in the generations of Noah's sons, and it's not really in the generations of Abraham and the patriarchs. And so you could sweep it into the stories of the flood, but there is some time distance. That's why I make the separation, why Brother Walter makes the separation, why I do too, is because time-wise there is some separation there. And so we got all those stories that are distinctly associated with the flood. All right, and then that leaves us with chapter 11, which is not connected in time, at least, to either one of those stories before or after. All right. And then where's the next break? Yeah. So it's the rest of the chapters, right? And it'll go all the way through chapter 50. There's no breaks, right? You go from Abraham and you pick right up with, in fact, there's overlap, right? We're still talking about Abraham while we're talking about Isaac. And we're still talking about Isaac while we're talking about Jacob and Esau. And we're still talking about Jacob while we're talking about Joseph. And so there's a lot of overlap. There's no breaks in the rest of these stories. So time-wise, that's one of the ways we might break it up. Now, go ahead. Yes, right. So let me just, in rough numbers, how much history is covered in the book of Genesis? Yeah, 2,000 to 2,500 years. How much history is covered in the rest of the Bible? About 2,000 years, all right? You're going to cover, and you look at Genesis, and then look at the rest of your Bible. God covered 2,000 years of history there, and then he's going to cover 2,000 years of history for all the rest. It speaks to the importance. Yes. Oh, right. I think he picks up after that 400 and therefore brings it in. So also Daniel chapter 11 covers the 400 years of silence. So God covers all that history, right? And so that's where our Bibles cover all of that history compared to what we're covering in Genesis. We're really overviewing, right? And at the time that Moses is writing this to the people that he's writing it to, he's going back to really bring them up to speed on what they need to know about the last few thousand years, right? And bringing them up to the present time. All right. So if we're breaking this up, though, because 12 through 50, that's a lot of chapters. That's a big chunk. And so I think there's some ways that we can break this up. And one of the ways I think we can break it up is who we're focused on. And so if we were to break it up and say, all right, where do we find stories about Abraham? Where would that go through? And particularly, let me just say this, where it's focused on Abraham, right? Not just that Abraham's still living, but where it's focused on Abraham. Yeah, 12 through, well, I would say the sacrifice of Isaac is particularly still focused on Abraham. All right, Isaac's come into the story, but who's obeying, right? It's about Abraham's obedience there. And so I would actually take it through, the stories about Abraham are through 23. He's burying Sarah at that point, so it's still about Abraham. You could put it after the Rebekah. In some ways, you could say that he is the one sending the servant to go get a wife for. So that's still Abraham's story. And then that would take you into chapter 25, where he dies towards the beginning of chapter 25. So that may be a better break. All right. What about Isaac? Where's the focus on him through? Yeah. I think through the end of 27 is where the focus finally shifts without coming back. From that point on, it's definitely on Jacob. All right, and then where does it shift to Joseph? Yeah, so 37, or you could say 39. You could say in some ways, again, 37 is still a lot of Jacob, and it's really his grief, and it's his treatment that causes this. So either one of those places. But that's another way you can break it up. You got Abraham, got a few chapters about Isaac, Jacob, and then the rest is going to be about Joseph. Now, very quickly, we've only got a few minutes left. I just want to go through and just point out a few things along the way about Jesus. Where is Jesus? Jesus in Luke 24 tells the men on the road to Emmaus. Luke tells us that he opened the scriptures and explained the things concerning himself, starting with Moses and the prophets. So just look here at some of the things that Jesus could explain. Is Jesus in the creation story? Now, we know more than what Moses wrote here. How fully do we know Jesus is in the creation story? In the beginning was the Word, right? So he was there, and everything that was made through him, all right? And so we see him in that way. Do you see him anywhere in Genesis chapter 2? Remember, Paul does. Where does Paul see him in Genesis chapter 2? Well, there's that. Let us make man in our image. But Paul makes an argument that he quotes Genesis chapter 2 and Ephesians chapter 5. Pardon? Adam created first. That's later. All right. But about Christ, he makes a connection between something God says in Genesis 2 and Christ. Yeah. Yeah. Right. The two shall become one flesh. And then he says, I'm speaking about Christ and the church. This is a great mystery, but I'm speaking about Christ and the church. He makes a connection there. And so what I'm saying is, when God creates marriage, what he does is creates a type of the relationship that we have with Christ. And that's what Paul does. He goes back and he points to that and he brings that forward and he makes a connection to Christ. In Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, we've already referenced that, the seed there. I want to make a lot of connections. I'm going to skip through some of them so that we can get to more of these. But as far as, let me make a connection here in chapter 11 and 12. In chapter 11, I think that as you try to connect that, one of the things I think we should try to do is as we go through and we look for connections, why is this story being told? Why is this story next? You got chapter 10, here's where all the countries came from. You got chapter 11, says, here's how they all got scattered around the earth. And then in addition to that, in chapter 11, you have people saying, let us make a name for ourselves. And one of the first things God says to Abraham is, I will make a great name for you. And so I think there's some real textual connections of that story between the chapter that precedes it and the chapter that follows it. All right, with regards to Abraham, he's all through the story. Where is he in the promises? He's in the seed promise. Where is he in the story of Melchizedek? Yep, he is Melchizedek, right? I mean, in a sense, in a figurative sense, Melchizedek becomes a type. Of course, the repetition of that covenant there with Abraham. As we go on through going down to the sacrifice of Isaac, where is he in that story? Yeah, so there's a couple of points to make here. First of all, he's a son, right? I think it's a picture of the sacrifice of Abraham offering his son. But then, at the end of it, the Lord will provide, and he's what God provides, right? And so that we don't end up having to go on the altar ourselves. I wish we had more time to just go through and pull out connections, because there's just so many of them here. But it's a good exercise for us to be thinking of Christ when we're reading through those stories and see what connections can be made. I appreciate your good participation and your good attention.